This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety.
Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 62. Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm your host, Sean from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
My kids are killing me.
Oh, really? How are they doing that?
They just are. I mean, there's sleep that's required that I'm not getting.
Just what kids do.
Just what kids do.
Yeah, I'm hearing the same thing from Baron. You should have seen him while he was recording this week's episode. Wow, poor guy.
Yeah, I can sympathize. Only I've been doing that for a year now.
Well, we're going to start with the Tactical Dog and Fitness Report. 24.4 dog walking miles, and the cooler weather continues. So it's so long to shorts on morning walks. I'm kind of missing him.
So next week, I'm planning on starting the couch to 5K again.
Oh, no.
Maybe. That's assuming that I sleep at all. So I run Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And so every Monday night, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna start the couch to 5K tomorrow. And then every Monday night, the baby is up like 6 times. And I don't want to run after that. So we'll see.
And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. Today, Aaron's going to talk about zombies? What the heck?
Come on, everypony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Paulette!
Okay, Aaron, I know you're a fan of The Walking Dead and all, but a segment on zombies? Really?
So I guess you missed the report on October 19th about the Brazilian man on an airline flight to Dublin who turned violent, bit a passenger, and then dropped dead. One of the people on board was quoted as saying, "The noise he was making was like something I have never heard before. It's not something you'd hear every day. It was like deep anguish, is the best way I could describe it. Very, very troubled. Not screaming in a sense you know if you'd hurt yourself or something. Just a very guttural from deep within him." Sean, if that isn't a zombie moan, I don't know what is.
But the report said the man bit and then died. Don't zombies die and then bite? And then there's this hoax report about a zombie attack in a Tennessee Walmart.
True, that is a hoax, thank goodness. But what about in Miami 2012 when that crazy naked guy attacked a homeless man on a highway and ate his face? And how being shot by a police officer didn't seem to slow him down and he needed to be shot another 4 times before stopping?
Wasn't he high on drugs or bath salts or something?
Oh, sure, that's what the police want us to think. Wake up, sheeple. The dead walk among us. Okay, all right, fine. Much to my regret, the zombie apocalypse is not upon us. Yet. But since we're coming up on Halloween, and both Nikki Kenyon and I are fans of the show, I wanted to talk about the usefulness of the zombie allegory when prepping.
Go on.
Zombies are a useful thought exercise for preppers, because they cover a multitude of disasters. Infectious disease, social unrest and the fall of government infrastructure, the simultaneous and conflicting need to both have a strong base of operations for rest and resupply, while also needing to stay mobile enough that you don't get surrounded or pinned down, the way that zombies are kind of like unpredictable ambush predators and kind of like predictable bad weather, and, of course, the fact that in a necropocalypse, the biggest threat doesn't come from the hungry dead, but rather from other people just like you who are willing to do whatever it takes to survive, even if that means taking your supplies and killing you. As I like to put it, if you are mentally and physically prepared to deal with the dead rising from the grave to feast upon the living, then dealing with bad weather or a terrorist attack is child's play in comparison. Which is pretty funny because I said that back in 2009, and in 2011, the Center for Disease Control's Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response actually created a zombie preparedness page. And in fact, as recently as 2012, there was a counterterrorism exercise based upon zombies because, one, the behavior of zombies and the behavior of violent people on mind-altering drugs is similar. See that Miami cannibal attack for proof. And two, modeling the spread of zombification is also a good way to map out the spread of a bioterror attack. Plus, there's the fact that zombies are very popular these days. The last I checked, The Walking Dead is the third most popular show on television. And everywhere you go, you can find more zombie TV shows, zombie movies, zombie comic books, even zombie freaking romance novels. This popularity gives useful social camouflage to a prepper. I've talked in the past about how not wanting to be seen as one of those paranoid into the world types, and the best way to do that is to disguise yourself as a fan of the show.
I see you have a lot of supplies there. Are you one of those paranoid end of the world types?
Oh no, I'm just a fan of The Walking Dead, and it got me thinking, you know? I know it's silly, but it helps me connect to the show and make it more fun. And besides, if the dead do rise, I'll be ready for them. Exactly. And for self-defense types, it's often more palatable to talk about headshotting zombies than it is to talk about practicing to shoot looters or home invaders, especially if you're dealing with the delicate, the squeamish, the overly correct. And again, it's social camouflage. If you're in a situation where you can be overheard, switch to talking about zombies. It's much better to be thought of as a weirdly obsessed fan of a TV show than it is to be reported to human resources because Sean has violent fantasies of killing people. There are also organizations that use the zombie motif to make disaster prep more fun. I want to give a shout out to Zombie Squad, which not only makes prepping entertaining, but also does good things like holding blood drives and food drives, and does volunteer work for the Red Cross and other charities. They've actually managed to turn their fandom into a source of positive change within the community, a bit like the Boy Scouts, only with a lot more gore, and they're probably all carrying concealed weapons. So yes, zombies are an important part of a prepper's toolkit, even if they're metaphorical or otherwise symbolic. And they've made planning for the end of the world both fun and socially acceptable.
All right, Aaron. See you next week with something a little less silly next time, okay?
Brains.
Oh, dear Lord.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com. Fun fact, if you ask my oldest kid, what does a zombie say? He will reply, beans.
Okay. Felons behaving badly. Clayton Holmes power cut by armed robbers in trick to lure the victim outside. Dateline Clayton, North Carolina. A 911 dispatcher was able to alert police when they heard a Clayton man being robbed in his home early Monday. A resident of Clayton Estates Mobile Home Park called 911 around 2:30 a.m. to report his power being out. The man went outside and discovered his breaker had been switched off and flipped his power back on. While still on the phone with dispatchers, he was approached by two men with their faces covered. The suspects said they had guns and demanded money. The 911 dispatcher heard the suspects in the background and called police to help. When Clayton police arrived, the resident ran out of the house, leaving the two suspects in the home. Officers then heard a single gunshot and found one suspect had shot out a window and had fled the scene. The Clayton Police Selective Enforcement Team with canine units arrived and set up a perimeter. Officer Jamie Brantley was about to release his canine partner Abel into the home when the suspect agreed to surrender peacefully. Suspect 22 of 107 Piccadilly Court, Clayton,
stop by and say hi,
was taken into custody and is being held at the Johnston County Jail under a $200,000 secured bond. Clayton police recovered $200 on suspect. A 9mm handgun was found inside the home. So, 2:30 in the morning, they turn the guy's power off.
You called 911.
Actually, I watched a video on it, and the dispatcher says it happens all the time. People lose power, they call 911.
Yeah, there's a dispatcher that's in my Sunday school class, and people call 911 because I run out of gas or because somebody got their order wrong at McDonald's.
In this case, it was a good thing because they jumped him while he was on the phone with 911.
Which I think is hilarious.
Yeah. And the cops got one of them, and they said they had solid leads on the second.
Good.
So what sort of person do you think turns off the power to his neighbor's home and jumps in with his friend and a gun?
Well, I'm sure he just needed some money to feed all the orphans that he also lives with. So...
collecting for Christian relief?
Yes.
With his concealed handgun permit?
Yes.
Common law robbery, 3/17/2012, felon class G. And he managed to make such a pest of himself after they released him that they gave him a post-release revocation and threw him back in jail, 1/22/2014.
All right. Fun times.
This week on Foreign Policy for Grownups, Nikki warns us of a new Cold War. Nikki, you've been talking a lot about our relations with Russia recently. You've said that Putin's military action in Syria isn't some kind of proxy war. You've also rejected the idea that we could work with Putin instead of against him. Where do you see U.S.-Russia relations going?
Well, this is a pretty interesting topic for me since I'm a child of the Cold War. I obviously hold no love for Russia, and given the fact that they have continued painting us as the biggest threat to their national security, obviously being warm and fuzzy and friendly to them is not a viable plan. Fact is, they have nukes. Fact is, Putin and his cronies want to rebuild Mother Russia into a world power. They just don't like U.S. primacy in the world as the lone superpower, and they want to shift the balance of power in their favor. I get it. They've been slapped around and all sorts of insulted because the West grew and developed and Russia has sort of like plodded along. Many of the economic modernization initiatives they claim to want to implement haven't actually happened. Even their military modernization plans have been thwarted by the latest recession. They counted on oil prices staying at around $100 per barrel. They're about half that right now. The ruble has lost much of its value. And even back in 2008, when they invaded Georgia, they realized their military capabilities left much to be desired. Overall, things are kind of rough for them now, and judging by their rhetoric, they are prime and ready for another Cold War. Because how do you distract a miserable populace from their misery?
Vodka.
Yeah, no. Other than destroying their livers. You give them an enemy. You provide them with a scapegoat. You show them who's really responsible for their lousy lot in life. All the while, you stir their nationalist pride by telling them they're strong and they're brave and they will persevere regardless of the challenges they face and the enemies who want to destroy them, like the big bad West, because they're badass.
I hope you don't mean Cold War like nukes, mutually assured destruction, you know, that sort of stuff. You don't, do you?
No. I think today's Cold War is actually going to be quite different. We're certainly not threatening each other with nuclear weapons. At the same time, though, we're very much adversaries. The Russians have publicly accused us of provocation and even created this utterly bizarre and ridiculous and obviously doctored recording of what they claim is two Western intelligence agents discussing how they're going to down the MH17 airliner over Ukraine. Remember that last year? So they're discussing that in Russian accents. So I'm wondering what kind of clown show the Russian propaganda machine is running, since these guys had obviously Russian grammar and syntax. It was so obviously doctored and fake, it was ridiculous. Meanwhile, the Russian foreign ministry has accused the West of trying to usher in a regime change. They're always paranoid about regime change, by imposing sanctions. Nah, these sanctions have nothing to do with Russia threatening the sovereignty and territorial integrity of its neighbors. Not at all. But again, you need an enemy. You need someone other than the leadership to blame for all the nation's woes, and you have a convenient way of doing so. At the same time, Russia is an indelible part of the world's economic structure. They overwhelmingly rely on energy exports to Europe, and should the EU decide to implement an embargo due to Russia's continued shenanigans in Ukraine, Russia will suffer. A lot. Something like 50% of its federal budget comes from energy exports, and energy exports constitute about 68% of their total export revenues. That's a lot to lose, and Russia can't afford to isolate itself like it did back during the first Cold War. So I think when we're talking about a Cold War, This one is going to be a bit different. It'll be more underhanded. And Russia will attempt to use tools such as its membership in the World Trade Organization and the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, to condemn the United States and our allies while trying to mitigate their economic losses by turning away from the EU. The more they increase their relationships with the BRICS and Asian nations writ large, the less reliant they will be on energy exports to the EU. I think this Cold War will be much more economic. Russia will use soft power to achieve its goals as well. It will fund political parties and movements in the former Soviet republics. We're already seeing that. It'll wage media campaigns. It'll penalize any NGOs within its borders that the Kremlin believes don't support its goals. We've seen that as well. And at the same time, they'll continue building up their military might. Not necessarily to take Russian forces to war or anything like that, but they want a show of strength. They want to show that Russia is still a superpower. They'll consider looking at us as an adversary, not because we're horrible people who are trying to destroy them, although that's pretty much what they want the world to believe, but because they need an enemy and because we're the best scapegoat they have. That said, I don't think it's wise to underestimate Russia. It is run by nationalist hardliners right now, and they're all about bringing back the glory of the Soviet Union. So I don't think they'll have any real problems stirring up more hard power crap.
All right, Nikki, it was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com.
Plug of the week. So I got myself a new keychain.
Yeah, keychain. Is it like a rabbit's foot? Is it like a Kubaton?
That has got to be the most useless self-defense tool in the history of man. What am I going to do with that?
I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I could take it and I could put it on his wrist and I can twist it and it'll cause him all kinds of pain as he punches me in the face with his other hand. No. So I posted a picture in the show notes. What do you think? What does that look like to you?
That looks like one of those little Leatherman Micra thingies, but there's a house key in it and other keys.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Swiss Army keychain.
Yes.
And it's purple.
It is purple, and I know that everybody is shocked to hear that you bought one that was purple.
Right, they do come in other colors if you happen to be one of those heathens that doesn't think purple is a great color. I've been waiting to get the new car because I've been told, you know, hey, we're going to have keyless entry. You don't have an actual key anymore. It's just a key fob. So I was waiting for that. These kind of keychains, they look like a Swiss Army keychain is what it is. You know, you fold the keys into them. I don't carry a lot of keys. I've been carrying 5 or 6 keys. I carry, you know, the pepper spray. I've been carrying a whistle because my dog is trained. If I blow the whistle, she'll come to me.
Oh, it's not a rape whistle?
You know what? It also works as a rape whistle. I can verify that I have never been raped when I was carrying this whistle.
Right.
Right. I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but in the entire time I've owned that whistle, nobody has attempted to rape me.
Good to know.
But no, it is a signaling device, actually. I blow that whistle and my dog comes running. Also, if I get lost in the woods, in the unlikely event that I go into the woods, I can blow the whistle until somebody comes and finds me. I don't want to wake people up by firing my gun 3 times in the air. That just seems dumb.
Right. And also, probably a crime? I don't know. Maybe.
Probably dangerous.
Yes.
What if I need those 3 bullets? Now I feel like a right fool now, wouldn't I?
Yes. Hey, at least you're not firing your arrows 3 times in the air.
There's got to be a story that goes with that. But the KeySmart is basically a Swiss Army keychain. And they'll sell you little loops. Well, it comes with 1 loop. I bought a 2nd loop. And I hang my pepper spray and my key fob on one end and the whistle on the other end. The rest of the keys, I found really most of the rest of the keys that are there because, well, I might need them. The only one I actually use is the key to the door to the house.
Right.
With the new key fob that, you know, I don't have to actually put the key in the car. I just lock the door, throw it in my pocket, and off I go. It comes with a front and a back plate. It comes with enough spacers for you to put up to 4 keys. If you want more than that, you can buy extra spacers for very little, like $2 or something. The whole thing, it cost me about $26 total for all the stuff that I got. I currently have 5 keys plus 2 little loops, and the 2 little loops on the end, you can put a standard split ring, mm-hmm. and you can hang the large car keys or a key fob, or in my case, pepper spray, on your keychain. And it's pretty cool. I like it a lot. There's an Amazon link for it. The link that I put in there will link you to everything that KeySmart sells. So take a good look at it. I will also put a link to KeySmart, the webpage itself. You can take a look at that and see how everything works. That way, when you go back to Amazon, you can buy just the stuff you want. You can buy through KeySmart, but it's going to take longer. If you got Amazon Prime, you get it in 2 days. And it's actually a little bit cheaper if you buy it from Amazon. So go to the show notes, use the link in there. Anytime you use the link, at no extra cost to you, you're supporting the show. Evil never sleeps. And since gun control is evil, the urge to disarm your fellow man never sleeps either. Bloomberg tells us that even the tightest gun control in the United States, the state of California, is not enough for him. Here to tell us about the latest Bloomberg-funded attack on our civil rights is the president of Firearms Policy Coalition, Brandon Combs. Brandon Combs is the president of Firearms Policy Coalition, the executive director of the CalGuns Foundation, president of CalFFL, and chairman of the Firearms Policy Foundation. He's leading the fight against Gavin Newsom's new anti-gun ballot initiative through Firearms Policy Coalition's Second Amendment Defense Committee PAC. Welcome to the show, Brandon.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Brandon, I see that California's Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom has decided it's time to attack law-abiding gun owners in California again. You studied the initiative he introduced. Can you tell me what's in it?
Well, Sean, first of all, what we're really talking about here is a ballot proposal that's made up of nothing more really than a bunch of bills that failed in the legislature. And really, I think that's a fundamental point that folks should understand. This isn't path-breaking policy work that he's proposing. He's talking about repurposing failed initiatives and failed policies. Policies that are so extreme and so nonsensical that not even the Democrat-controlled legislature and California Governor Jerry Brown would pass them. So first, the ballot proposal is going to go after nothing less than a total confiscatory ban on what are called large capacity magazines in California. The rest of the world calls them normal, regular factory capacity magazines. And as folks know, California has a ban on the sale of new large capacity magazines, and recently magazine repair kits and stuff like that. However, there are millions of legally possessed large capacity magazines in the state of California. We know this from sales data over the past 20 or 30 years. There are literally millions of legally possessed magazines in California that this bill would affect. And at least tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Californians that would lose their personal property because of this ballot proposal if it passes. An important point here is that Lieutenant Governor Newsom's ballot proposal says, well, Californians can just sell them out of state and they won't lose their property. And there's a real problem with that legally because California has a long-standing ban on the sale or even offering to sell these large capacity magazines. So what's really happening here is a squeeze play. On one hand, California law says that it's illegal for you to even offer your magazines if you legally have them for sale. But at the same time, this ballot proposal says, well, if you don't want to turn your guns and these large capacity magazines into the police, then you have to sell them. Well, how is that going to be possible? Because, as I said, California already banned and makes criminal their sale or even to say that you are selling them, for example, even on the internet. So I think it's a real squeeze play by the other side. And frankly, I think that's an intentional one. So what happens if this ballot proposal passes and a law-abiding gun owner says, you know what, I don't want to break the law by keeping these magazines. I would like to not, however, lose all of the money I have invested in these large capacity magazines. And they put them up for sale. Well, all of a sudden now they have these cumulative criminal penalties that will probably end up taking away their gun rights. So how many people are really going to know if this initiative passes? How many law-abiding gun owners are going to know how to legally deal with their magazines? And I think that's a real fundamental problem here is this proposal has nothing in terms of outreach or requirement for DOJ to let everybody know what the law is and how it affects them. And frankly, again, I think that that's purposeful. If they can catch more law-abiding gun owners in the spider web of California's Byzantine gun control laws, then that's more people that they can put on a prohibited list and take their guns away from. And really, isn't that what they want?
Brandon, isn't California a lost cause? Why should gun owners care about yet one more gun law in a state that already has the worst gun laws in the nation?
Well, first of all, California is not a lost cause. And in fact, I would argue that California and states like it, the battleground states, are exactly the cause. And the reason I say that is the real crux and fundamental flaw of the Second Amendment is not going to be defined in places like Texas. It's going to be in places like California, which does not have a state right to keep and bear arms provision in its constitution. So what we're going to find out is, what does the Second Amendment mean? Not to the people of, for example, Alaska. It's going to be in places like California and Hawaii, as well as others that we know of, but New York, New Jersey, and Maryland. Those are going to be the places where the real core of the Second Amendment is defined. So not only is California not a lost cause, but we're gaining some ground. I think this ballot proposal is, in fact, an indicator, evidence that says that we're gaining ground. We're winning even in the California legislature, and the only way for them to move their ball forward is to try to misdirect and use emotional arguments and fabricated data points to try to pitch this to the voters and use a lot of mainstream media and advertising to try to sell this issue to people, because even the legislature in California is not willing to buy off on these things. So is California a lost cause? No, I think it is the cause. And every gun owner in the United States needs to hear that civil rights don't have borders. We cannot look at this as one state's problem or another. I hear sometimes something even to the effect that California should just fall off into the ocean. Well, I think that's the wrong idea here, because you know what? As Colorado found out, and I think as other states are going to find out, what happens in California is simply the model. And it may lag 10 or 20 years, but it's coming to your state. It's just a matter of when.
I just heard from Ryan Mashad, host of Handgun Radio, that signature collectors have already started in his home state of Maine. This looks like it's going to be a multi-state fight. What's the danger of fighting this as individual states rather than as a national effort?
Well, I think there is a real danger of fighting this as if each of these issues were in a vacuum. This is a coordinated campaign on the other side, backed by folks like Mike Bloomberg and his money, that ultimately they want to take this around to the entire country. They can't win in Congress right now, and they know it. So what they're going to do is put their money into fighting politically, not even legislatively, but politically, in states like California, Maine, and even Nevada and Arizona are up against a fight. This is not going to be limited in scope to a state. Each proposal might be a little different, but really it's all the same. This is Bloomberg's march towards the closest thing to a total gun ban. If they can't ban your handgun, and Heller says they can't, then they're going to make it as difficult as they possibly can for you to be a law-abiding person and have that handgun. They're going to make it to where you're subject to all sorts of confusing regulations, to where you couldn't possibly be a law-abiding gun owner, because they've made it so difficult and complicated that just on accident, incidentally, people will violate the law and become a prohibited person. And really, that's what they want. It's a three-pronged approach, and it's across the United States. We need to be looking across our state borders and to the larger issue. They want to get us on a list, and they're going to do that with something called universal background checks. What good are universal background checks if they don't record the information? So regardless of where they start, what they want are anchor policies to bootstrap other provisions too. So you get a universal background check, and then you get a list, and then you have a list of guns that are prohibited. And eventually, you end up with so many different databases that as people become prohibited, the law enforcement community responds to them by mandate and takes away their guns. Even people that are nonviolent, there are laws on the books right now, and certainly that are being proposed, that will end up with folks that do fairly innocuous stuff and end up as prohibited persons. So if they can't ban all guns, they're going to make it exceedingly difficult to be a law-abiding gun owner, and that's really what they want.
All right, Brandon, it was good to talk with you. I'll see you again soon.
Thanks very much, Sean.
You can get more involved at StopNewsom.com. That's stop, NEWSOM.com.
Fun with headlines.
Okay, so usually we have, you know, headline says one thing and then the actual story says something else. This is going to be fun with headlines because these headlines are just fun. I'll start off. Meerkat expert bashes monkey handler in face over llama keeper in zoo love triangle.
Zookeeper assaults zookeeper over love triangle with fellow zookeeper.
That's pretty good, right? So that's a little bit better. This one is probably my favorite one. Zookeepers behave like animals during Menagerie à Trois at London Zoo Christmas party.
And finally, Menagerie à Trois. Monkey handler suffers nightmares over glassing as love rival zoologist spared jail.
This happened in London, and so that last one, actually those last two, were from British newspapers.
Right.
You and I were talking about this before the show, and I made a comment that we had to include the glassing one because apparently hitting somebody in the face with your alcoholic beverage receptacle is so common in Great Britain that they actually came up with a word for it.
The last one, you know, the zoologist spare jail one, a meerkat expert has been ordered to pay £800 compensation after glassing a love rival monkey handler in a row over a llama keeper at a Christmas party.
It's funny and we're laughing at the words, but it actually sounded like it was a pretty brutal attack.
It was pretty bad. In an impact statement, Miss Sanders, this is the one who got hit, said she has been left with an ugly scar on her cheek, quote, which will be with me for the rest of my life, unquote. I have to see that scar every day when I look in the mirror, she added. Miss Sanders says she suffers from nightmares and stress and is afraid to leave her home for fear of running into the suspect and her friends. Yeah, so apparently they got into it. She's the ex-girlfriend. The woman with the glass was the current girlfriend. I think that was the current girlfriend.
Let's hope.
Yeah. They got into it, and she had a wine glass and bashed the girl in the face while holding the glass, cutting her face up.
Yeah.
Pro tip, stay away from women when they're mad. Because they may not have a sense of scale.
Mm.
Yeah. It is some pretty funny stuff, except for the fact that it isn't funny at all.
Right.
This week, Baron tells us that a cool video and some vague sciencey sounding words doesn't mean that a Kickstarter project will ever work. He has a great example in...
Tech tips.
Tech tips.
Tech tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech tips with the Baron.
Baron, I saw this awesome Kickstarter shared on Facebook today, and it was so cool. It really caught my attention. It was an LED light that ran off your body heat.
Ah, I saw that too. The principle is what they would call a TEG, which is a thermoelectric generator to power the LED.
So that sounds pretty legitimate, right? It's based on real existing technology and science.
Yes and no. I personally wouldn't pay them any money at all. This is damn near as stupid as those solar freaking roadways.
Solar freaking roadways.
What are they?
They're solar freaking roadways.
Here's the problem. It's a matter of scale and understanding exactly how it works. A TEG is also known as a Peltier junction. If you apply power, one side will get hot and the other will get cold. You can generate voltage by applying heat to one side and cooling the other side. The bigger the differential, the more power you can generate. You can also increase your power by increasing your overall surface area. This is where the first couple design issues come into play. Tell me, Sean, a keychain you carry every day, where do you keep it?
Well, in my pocket.
And what happens to things in your pocket?
Well, they probably stay pretty warm.
So the entire outside of this flashlight is going to be warm. Not quite straight body temperature, but actually approaching it. The output of this light is determined by differential. So if you have something to cool it down on one side, you might be able to get some output. So you have an issue of trying to seek the heat away to get the differential.
Okay, yeah, so that's going to be an issue. But why do I have a feeling you've got more?
Oh, yes, there's more. There's actually the efficiency of a TEG. I haven't been able to find solid, reliable numbers for a human body type temperature. Everything I've found is for about 400 degrees Fahrenheit and up. Most of the ones I can find are fairly big, such as 10 watts or even 200 watt variants that sit on top of a camp stove. The only difference between the two is surface area. The big item there is the differential. That 10 watt comes at about 750 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a huge differential to help push electrons through the pipe. Let's say it's about 32 degrees Fahrenheit outside. You'll get a 66 degree ideal differential, whereas that campfire system will be about 680 degree differential for an ambient room temperature. So for about 10 watts, that's about 0.01 watts per degree.
That's not very big.
Yep, and remember what I said about scale? So that 66 degrees really just gives you over half of a watt, which you could probably run an LED off of.
Well, that's good news.
Except the example was based around a 3.3 pound heater. So you're going to shrink that all into a tiny flashlight, probably a fraction of that size and weight for a heat sink. There's no way you're actually going to pull a quarter of a watt out of that to supply that little LED. This goes all back to a very important tip. Don't just jump on a Kickstarter bandwagon because it sounds good and you see other people kicking their money to it. Do your research and verify your facts behind the topic. This isn't to say it's entirely impossible. However, I just don't see it actually happening in the scale or form factor he describes.
Well, that's good advice in general.
That it is, Sean.
All right, Baron. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org. And we should remind you that not only is Baron our tech tips guy, he has a degree in electrical engineering.
So yeah, I'd guess he probably knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
The J-Block. Wanted to talk a little gas mileage today.
Gas mileage? I get like 12.
Really?
I do. I get about 12.
Wow. Okay, that's pretty bad.
I drive a lifted 4x4 that's, you know, can vote.
Okay, I'll give you that. And you like to work on things, so I guess it's the perfect car for you.
Yes.
Well, may I remind you that we're riding in my car from now on?
Yes.
Okay, so the reason I wanted to talk about this is because I just got a new car. It's a new company car. It is a Toyota Camry hybrid. And ooh. I would never have gotten a hybrid. I just don't think the money works out in the long run. But that's not really what I want to talk about here. It's a great car. I really like it. Unexpectedly, I really like the car so far. I've almost 1,400 miles in 2 weeks, and I'm pretty happy with it. But what I wanted to talk about is how useless the information in miles per gallon actually is.
Really?
Yeah, it's actually a fairly useless piece of information. There's only one thing you can do with miles per gallon. If you can estimate how many gallons you have in your tank, you can tell how many miles you can go.
Right? Isn't that the point?
But how do you compare that car to this car?
Well, so I get 12 miles to the gallon in my car, and you get how many?
Currently, I'm getting 35. I'm told it will probably go higher than that, but I'm currently getting about 35 miles to the gallon.
So if we were to go the same distance, it would cost me 3 times as much. I'd probably also have to fill up like 6 times.
Well, I actually built a little chart, and what I'd like people to start thinking of is when you're comparing vehicles, there's the change in mileage from, say, 12 to 20 is enormous.
Yes.
But say from 35 to 50 is relatively small.
But that's 15 miles an hour. Wait, hang on. Carry the what? Huh? But that's like twice the increase in miles per gallon. And you're saying that the one that's higher is actually not as good?
What you need to do is you need to convert your miles per gallon to gallons per 100 miles or gallons per 10,000 miles or per 15,000 miles. Depends on how much you drive. And then compare those numbers. So what I did is let's say you said 12 miles per gallon.
Yes.
That's 8.3 gallons for every 100 miles you drive.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Or 1,250 gallons to go 15,000 miles. 15,000 miles is a good year for most people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say you were to change to a 20 mile per gallon car. So you get 8 more miles per gallon, right?
Right.
That goes from 5 gallons per 100 miles or 750 gallons per 15,000 miles. Well, that's a fairly hefty savings there.
That's pretty significant.
Now, I'm getting 35 miles to the gallon. My father claims to get 45 miles to the gallon or 50 miles to the gallon in his Prius. So let's take my dad at his word at 50 miles per gallon in his Prius.
Which okay.
I think might be a little overstated, but let's give him the benefit. How many miles from 35 to 50? That's 15 miles per gallon better, right?
Right.
So what I worked out was the differential in number of gallons, the number of gallons I would put for 15,000 miles more than my father would put in his car for the same 15,000 miles is a total of 128.57 gallons of gas for 15,000 miles. So if gas stays at its current rate of $2.25 a gallon around here, that means that he's saving a grand total of $289.29 for 15,000 miles.
That's not as impressive.
No, it isn't. Even if it jumps to some ridiculous amount, as much as I remember seeing it in this area, $3.50 a gallon, we're talking $450 is all you save. And that's an enormous jump in fuel economy from 35, which is really freaking good, to 50, which is almost unheard of. And you're going to save $450 with gas at $3.50 a gallon. So the point I really wanted to get across here, and this is something that I talked about with one of the people that I met in the course of my job, he was trying to compare two different cars. One of them got him 30 miles to the gallon, and one got him 35 miles to the gallon. And I said, all right, let's look at it. From 30 to 35 miles to gallon, even if we're taking, at the time, gas was kind of expensive, so $3.50 a gallon, the difference over 15,000 miles was $250. You're going to save $250, but the problem is the stripped-down Econo box that you get at 35 miles to the gallon, which they're generally little runabout cars, you're going to put 15,000 miles with your butt in the seat of this stripped-down piece of junk, which is not going to be anywhere near as comfortable as the 30-mile-per-gallon car. So is $250 over the course of 1 year, which is, what, $20 a month?
Yeah.
Is $20 a month on your car to, you know, that you can add to your car payment worth the pain and suffering of the torture box? Or do you just go for the 30-mile-per-gallon car, which is really good?
Right.
30 miles per gallon is really good, guys.
Right.
Right? You know, let's not get all wrapped around the axle. Oh my goodness, we all got to drive crazy high mileage. That's not the way MPG works. So when you're comparing cars, do yourself a favor. Take that miles per gallon and invert it. Divide 100 by the whatever that number is. That'll give you gallons per 100 miles. And then compare directly. Because honestly, in the end, why are you saving gas? You're saving gas because you don't want to pay the money. Well, compare directly. How much gas are you saving? The difference between 30 miles per gallon and 35 miles per gallon is, over the course of 15,000 miles, is 71.43 gallons. Well, multiply that times whatever the gas price is, and that's how much money you save. Is it worth it? Maybe it's worth it to you. But for most of us?
And honestly, if you're that concerned about gas prices and gas mileage that you're thinking about buying a car based on its gas mileage, you probably shouldn't be buying a car that's very expensive, because, you know, like a $2,000 car that gets 20 miles to the gallon a year from now, still going to be worth $2,000. But a $30,000 car that gets 35 miles to the gallon, do they make those? 2 years from now is going to be worth like $22,000. So there's that.
Yes.
But you don't buy your car. So.
Well, I don't. And I wouldn't, honestly, now back to what I'm driving. I'm driving that 2016 Toyota Camry hybrid, and I would never have purchased a hybrid. You could not have gotten me in the door and said, you know, you need to buy this car. I like it. It's a good car. I really do.
Oh, I'm sure it's got lots of buttons.
Well, no, actually, it's fairly not that complicated. You know, it's not that bad. I mean, I got out of a Chevy Malibu, and I swear they just put buttons on buttons just to be, you know, because they had nothing better to do with their lives.
Right.
But no, once I get used to the controls being in a slightly different location, it's going to be great. I like it.
Car's a car.
True. Also that. And now a word from our sponsor. You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the ten ring, but have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey, or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state. And make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off. After the Oregon college shooting, the anti-gun politicians have come out of the woodwork again. That means there's no shortage of candidates for a patented weird audio fisk. This week, it's Representative Earl Blumenauer, D. Oregon, in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery. Well, hey, Weird, what's going on this week?
Sean, why do we still have a gun control side in politics? I just don't understand.
What do you mean, Weird?
Just listen to this speech by Oregon Representative Earl Blumenauer.
Last Thursday, another horrific episode of gun violence, the seemingly unrelenting stream of tragedy and horror, only this time it was visited on Oregon, in a modest mill town of Roseburg. The scene of the carnage was a picturesque, some would say idyllic, community college campus just north of town, where a shooter burst into a classroom at Umpqua Community College and started methodically killing 9 people, wounding 7 others.
Not mentioned was that this community college had an anti-gun policy in effect, and while the pro-gun people of Oregon passed a law removing criminal charges from carrying on school grounds, it is still legal for the school to take disciplinary action against the students who are complying with state law and not doing anything wrong. This is true for Umpqua Community College, where students faced expulsion for legally carrying on campus, and staff can face termination. I guess his statement is correct about methodical about the killer's action. He did have a method. Kill as many people, preferably Christians, before the armed police showed up, and then take his own life. Still, is it just me? When I hear methodical when it comes to a shooting, I think of Navy SEALs or SWAT entry teams sweeping rooms and eliminating threats, not some pimple-faced goofball with no skills, training, or thought-out plan shooting innocent people like fish in a barrel.
On the 274th day of 2015, this was the 294th such episode.
294 school shootings in 274 days? Are you kidding me? Use logic here. This school shooting has been wall-to-wall news coverage for over a week, and now you are to think that this happens more than once a day? No, he's hoping that you don't notice that he's no longer talking about mass murder in a school, and is now talking about total number of incidents where 4 or more people have been shot. This includes all manners of street crime. He's conflating 2 completely different types of crime to further his agenda.
The core of his message was a question for all Americans, especially the apologists for gun violence. Why is the United States the only developed country in the world that cannot protect our family from gun massacres?
Okay, first up, who's an apologist for gun violence? Lawful gun owners have done nothing wrong and have nothing to apologize for. And second, we are pissed. I'd argue more pissed when we see such senseless carnage. As for your hand-wringing questions, why do all these shootings happen where good people are disarmed? In this instance, not only were law enforcement sparse on campus before this event, but the sole officer was unarmed, and any lawful gun owner faces loss of their education and tuition, which is no small punishment for the audacity of treating the streets and buildings of campus no different than the streets and buildings of every other part of Roseburg, or Oregon for that matter. Why did this happen in Oregon, which had just enacted its so-called universal background check law, which the killer fully complied with? Blumenauer himself said on June of 2014, "Another shooting. I always hope tragedy will inspire action. Simple common sense steps make a difference. Start with universal background checks."
No other country comes remotely close to this carnage.
Wrong. As John Lott has shown, mass public shootings are common across Europe. On a per capita basis, the U.S. is right about in the middle of the pack compared to those enlightened European countries. They are more frequent in number in the U.S. because the U.S. is the 3rd largest country in the world. There are so many people in the U.S. that the proverbial million-to-one shot would happen over 300 times a day.
When other countries like Canada, Britain, and Australia, that are probably more similar to our country than any others, why were they able to respond not just with outrage or moments of silence, but with action after mass shooting events to make a difference, to make their families safer?
Notice the stammer here. This guy isn't like Obama last week with a bulk of his speech being stammers and stutters. He's a very good speaker, and he was well rehearsed in his speech. It's full of lies, but he's good at lying. What he's not good at is telling the truth, and notice how nervous he gets when he gets within arm's length of the truth. UK, Canada, Australia all registered and confiscated otherwise lawfully held firearms. Maybe it wasn't nervousness, maybe it was pure excitement. Also, no, it didn't make the people of these countries safer, not in any way.
I'm pleased with the response from my party. It was not one of hopelessness and resignation or stuff happens, but instead calls to action with simple, common sense steps that are widely supported by the American public.
Earl, are you listening? Bovine excrement. There's nothing you said in this clip that was true. Have you seen the pictures of the Obama protest when he came to Roseburg this week? The pro-freedom side is calling for action, and they are not hopeless or resigned. We want those gun-free zones gone. They're magnets for deranged killers and terrorists. The Democrat response has been, A, praising nations that outright banned guns, but never allowing themselves to say that's what they want, and in most cases lying about wanting to ban guns. B, call for federal background check law, which was the state law in Oregon where the shooting happened. Oh yeah, and the murderer in this case, like basically every other case, passed his background check. Seriously, with this crap being spewed, why is there still an anti-gun movement in the United States? Also, if universal background checks were so popular, why did it pass so narrowly in the very blue state of Oregon? And why is it we who oppose these horrible laws are always exactly right about how ineffective they are at reducing violent crime?
I'm hopeful there will be greater accountability for both parties to supply solutions.
Excuse me? The Republican side has been for eliminating barriers for concealed carry and eliminating gun-free zones that attract these lunatics, as well as harbor the more pedestrian, everyday violent criminals that kill vastly more than the spree killers. The Democrats? Ban guns and magazines like the 94 assault weapons ban, which was proven not to work. And pass universal background checks, which was the law in Oregon and did nothing to prevent this, even though people like Representative Blumenauer continually claimed it would. Why are we still even listening to them? This is like that preacher that keeps predicting the rapture every few years.
It's no excuse for ours to be the only developed country that cannot protect our children.
God, not this crap again. Again, developed country that is handpicked to suit the numbers we want and who don't even count crime the same way as we do. And we can and do protect our children. Look at all the places that don't have these events. We do protect our children. Except in those places where the people were stupid enough to give the sociopaths what they wanted.
Ours is the only country, for instance, where leaders prohibit the government from even investigating gun violence, its causes and solutions.
This is a lie. As I said last week, Congress only bans using public funds to advocate taking away people's civil rights. There is no ban at all on researching gun violence. There's not even a ban on using public funds to do it. But you can't use the tax money to advocate against our civil rights. That's exactly what the law says. No public funds for the purpose of advocating or promoting gun control. There's no law against private citizens using their own money to gin up false and misleading studies that push for gun control. Heck, that's basically all the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health does. What Blumenauer really is complaining about is the people who want to take away our civil rights can't get your tax money to fund it.
The president exhorted us not to be numb to gun violence. One is hopeful in the midst of this unprecedented, bizarre presidential nominating process, already in full swing with more than a year yet to go, that perhaps we have the opportunity to make sure this doesn't leave the national political stage.
I sure hope it doesn't. I can't imagine anything more likely to sink Hillary and now Sanders in their attempts to one-up each other in their promises to take away our guns. The masks have been ripped off. And it would take a complete moron to still believe that old Democrat lie, no one wants to take away your guns.
When comments like Republican candidate Ben Carson condemning President Obama's decision to visit and console the families in Roseburg in a private meeting, that somehow he would wait for the next one, it's stunning.
If you haven't, go re-listen to my segment last week. President Obama, while the bodies were still warm and the blood still flowing from the victims, gave a highly politicized speech that he started with a statement that he knew nothing about what had actually happened at that event. But he wanted people to fall lockstep behind him at passing laws that don't work. Would any rational person think that he really gives a damn about the victims or their families?
Reasonable people should ask reasonable questions about reasonable solutions and demand that politicians answer the question, when stuff happens, why can't we protect our families from this slaughter? And what are they prepared to do to change it?
And irrational people offer irrational solutions that have been proven to do no good, which makes it pretty clear that the real motivation is simply to ignore the Second Amendment and round up all the guns. Why are we letting these fools sit at the grown-up table? There is a shooting on an Oregon campus, and the solution is to turn the nation into an Oregon campus. Do not forget what really happened in Australia and England when you hear the anti-gun politicians talk about them. They want to take your guns, and we cannot let them even try to do it.
All right, Weird. It was good talking with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Stuff that grinds my gears. Gun owners who immediately toss their fellow gun owners under the bus.
Like everyone who read about the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin thing in the first 6 weeks.
Oh, no, it wasn't the first 6 weeks. It was like 3 weeks after, and then that was the first 6 weeks after that.
Yes.
Because for 3 weeks, nobody heard a single thing about it because the cops went, well, that's pretty open and shut. Never mind.
Right.
Bystander who fired at fleeing shoplifter's vehicle is charged in Michigan. You remember this story?
Actually, I had not seen this story because not on Facebook. You know, just reading the headline, well, yeah, of course a bystander who fires at somebody fleeing shoplifter.
Right. And see, this is not a rant about her being charged. I think it is very likely that she committed at least a minor crime. And I have no problem with her being punished for her minor crime. That's not what I'm mad about. What bothers me is that as soon as something looks even the slightest bit hinky, all the gunners go, oh, no, 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 you never do that. That's horrible. That's terrible. She should be punished. Come on, you people. Have you never read the newspaper before? Have you never read stuff on the internet? I mean, let me clue you all in. The internet is the world's biggest bathroom wall. It just has a really good search function. Anybody can write stuff on the internet. Heck, even I can put my own voice on the internet. How hard can it be? And the fact that they're employed at a newspaper doesn't mean they are free from bias. So you don't know what the heck happened. Luke talked about this on Triangle Tactical Podcast, and I think he's wrong. He'd like to see this woman lose her carry rights, possibly forever. Well, I had actually just spoken about this or posted about this on a friend of mine's blog. Why is everybody so up in arms about this story? People are acting like it's the crime of the century. Does she even get a trial before she gets tossed under the bus? Do we gun owners actually believe that if we burn this woman at the stake, that the gun haters will magically have a come to John Moses Browning moment? And suddenly say, oh, we were wrong about you gun owners and gun carriers. You aren't total retard rednecks with tiny penises and Charles Bronson fantasies. You're actually reasonable people, just like us, who simply have come to a different conclusion about guns and personal defense items. Get off it. They hate us because that's who they are. They won't love gun owners because hating us is one of their defining characteristics. Let this woman have her fair trial. Unencumbered by thousands of gun owners screaming, no true Scotsman, and burn the witch. The facts of the case as we know it are 1. She shot her gun. 2. She hit her target. 3. No one got hurt in any way. That's all we know. Things we don't know. Was she or anyone else directly threatened by the fleeing felons? 2. Does Michigan's fleeing felon law apply in her case? She used deadly force, but in a decidedly non-deadly fashion. She isn't claiming to have been shooting at the tires. She actually hit the tire on the fleeing vehicle. That's not a claim. That's actual, provable fact. Now, as I said earlier, this does not make her actions, as they were described by the law enforcement, and as they were reported in the newspaper, actions that you and I should go out and emulate. She took a risk that I probably wouldn't have taken. But lacking any more information, I can't pass judgment on her. More to the point, neither can anyone else. That's why we have trials. And taking all the information that they reported as true, putting her in the worst light possible, this is hardly the crime of the century. She's charged with what's called a 93-day misdemeanor, which is basically the lowest class of misdemeanor in Michigan. That's equivalent to like a Class 2 or Class 3 misdemeanor in North Carolina. Even if they find her guilty on this, she's going to get a fine, a strong admonishment never to do this again, and maybe some community service. So, why are we spilling so many barrels of pixels over this incredibly minor offense? Are we, as gun-carrying citizens, such a hated minority that every single transgression any one of us is involved in warrants national news coverage. What about you, Adam?
So I almost got T-boned today.
Oh, well, how'd that go?
Yeah, it was pretty well. It was right in front of my house.
What were you doing there?
Pulling into my driveway. I live on a cul-de-sac, and the guy behind me decided that as I was pulling into my driveway was when he needed to pass me, going to the end of the cul-de-sac. What? What? So the guy had out-of-county plates, so I don't know if he was maybe visiting somebody and just following his GPS and didn't understand that he was on a cul-de-sac. I don't really know, but like I was looking in my rearview mirror and I was actually watching for it because he was like doing that little like creeper move, right? Where he's like halfway out and you know, I'm like, okay. So I actually turn on my turn signal that I'm going to turn, and that's when he like tries to go around me.
And I visited you. I've been on that street. There is no possible reason to pass anybody on that street.
Right.
It's a residential street.
Yes.
It's not a road that even has lane markers in it. It's just a chunk of pavement between two houses.
Exactly. And it's not one of those that's like three lanes wide but just doesn't have any markings. It's a little two lane that ends in a cul-de-sac. Like, come on. Seriously. You can't be in that much of a hurry.
Well, that's our show for the week.
Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music.
And Firearms Policy Coalition for their support.
And thank you for listening to the Gun Blog Variety Cast.
Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com.
And hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com.
Like and share us on Facebook.
If you have that sort of thing.
And if you receive this podcast through iTunes, make sure to leave us a glowing 5-star review.
Show notes can be found at GunBlogVarietyCast.com/episode 62.
This is a URS production.